Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck and I am your host, also joined by Shad Marquitz as my co-host this weekend and throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, with all our daily editorials and company updates. This weekend show, we are focusing a lot more on the resource sector and diving into some of the resource stocks, especially in the precious metals sector, in terms of where some of our guests see opportunities and also their trading strategies. Look, after a pretty bad week for commodities, especially precious metals, 2 weeks ago, this last week was much quieter. We did get a little bit of a bounce in gold, but it wasn't much, and that $1,800 level seemed to be a top for this week, at least right now. Shad and I are kicking off the show with Dave Erfle, founder and editor of the Junior Miner Junkie. And Dave, let's dive right into some of these shorter term and actually balance that out with some of the longer term charts for gold. Look, again, 2 weeks ago, gold went through kind of a waterfall decline right above 1900 the whole way down to, just below 1800, around 1760 actually. And we did get a little bounce this week, but again, nothing to write home to. Dave, what are you taking away from this recent action in gold? Also considering it is summer and you know what? Gold's looking kind of weak.
Yeah, Corey, it's been an interesting past few weeks in the gold sector. We had a false move out of the triangle where it broke out of above that 1850 level. And it broke out slowly and got towards 1900, got above 1900, got up to the area where it started trading at the beginning of the year. And then once the Fed came out and didn't necessarily do anything, all they did was a bunch of jawboning and go from basically not talking about raising rates or tapering to now thinking about doing that. So this set off the algorithms and stops were ran, and the gold price got all the way down to that 1760 area, as you said, very quickly, and it erased all of last month's gains in just a few trading sessions. So we had an outside reversal on the monthly, which looks very ugly on the charts. So and now, as you also said, the gold price hasn't really bounced much. What it's doing now, it looks like it's creating a bear flag. And today is Thursday. We're talking after the close on Thursday. Tomorrow is the last day of trading of futures and options for the month. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get another hit down tomorrow into the weekend. And if that 1760 area gets broken, eventually I wouldn't be surprised to see that 1675 area tested. Sure, it's oversold right now and we could get some bounces in between there, and we probably will, but the silver price is now leading also lower. It's showing relative weakness. The miners are showing weakness. The majors especially, there's a lot of profits being taken out of the majors. You got the stock markets continuing to make all-time highs. Look at the NASDAQ today making an impressive move to an all-time high. So it looks like some more consolidation is in store for the gold bulls.
Well, Dave, I just have a quick question for you. Do you think it was significant that when gold did get up to that, around that 1920 level, which was the prior high in 2011, that it just happened to sync up with the Fed speech, and that was a significant resistance point, kind of a memory of where that old all-time high was? Do you think that was significant?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, because anybody who got into gold as a safe haven play at the beginning of the year, they're selling it. They're even on the trade. And there's no need to have any safe havens as the market continues to go higher. So that was a good place for them to get out. So that added selling didn't help gold either. Absolutely.
Well, and on that weekly chart, too, because of kind of the roller coaster ride gold has been on this year, for fading for the first 2 months of the year, taking a month in March to kind of move sideways and then rising for two more months, it didn't get to a new all-time high, at least on that weekly chart, and then all of a sudden started that waterfall decline, it still technically means that gold is in this downtrend that's now longer than 8 months. It's closing in on a year now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it looks like it's going to need more time to consolidate. I mean, that was a huge move that we had to its all-time high. Especially in the miners. The miners went up 180% in 4.8 months. So that needs a lot more time to consolidate, and we're also going to need reasons for investors to get back into this sector. And it's not coming from investors worried about the stock market, worried about losing stock market gains as it continues to make new highs. So we're just going to need some more patience. The fundamentals are still bullish for the long term. Gold can even come down and test 1575, 1600 and still be in its long-term bull trend. I don't expect that to take place, but I certainly wouldn't rule it out either. So with all this uncertainty around right now, I've built up some cash on the bounce here. I recommended my subscribers to do the same. So we've got summer doldrums going on here, and we all know what happens during the summer doldrums. You know, volatility comes into a lot of these stocks as the volatility pretty much dries up, a lot less trading, people go on summer vacations. You know, the last few years they haven't been able to go on vacation. So a lot of these people, a lot of people are going on vacation and they're not going to be trading. And it's a great time to put instinct bids in your favorite stocks. It's a good time to have some cash and wait around to chart your favorite stocks to see where's a good place to come in. You know, the gold market is famous for making these false moves. It always makes a false move in the opposite direction before it makes a big move. And it happened in 2016. It happened in 2019. It looks like it's going to happen again here. I wouldn't be surprised to see that area tested, that's 1575, 1600 area tested, which also lines up with the 50% retracement level from the move from late 2015 from 1045 to August of last year to 2089. The 50% retracement is 1557, I think. So I wouldn't be surprised if that takes place. I'm not predicting that, but it wouldn't shock me now after what's happened this week.
Well, Dave, just circling back around to something you just said a minute ago, you know, it doesn't seem like the generalist investors are interested in the sector, and many of them did just liquidate positions, right near that Fed talk. If they were back up mm-hmm. at that level, they probably cleared them out. So what do you think it's going to take to get – what kind of a fundamental driver would have to happen to get generalists back in again? Because they've also dumped the senior miners as well. We've seen a pullback in a lot of the majors. Do you mm-hmm. think it would be the general stock market pulling back down again, as you alluded to?
I think it will be the general stock market pulling back down. Yes, because we've been saying it for quite a long time how overvalued it is, overpriced it is, how it just keeps defying gravity, and all these things that are taking place outside the market with these Doge coins and NFT things going for crazy valuations, and it's just crazy time out there because of all this money floating around. And I think just in generalist investors need to be a little bit scared to get back in the gold into gold again. But if you take a look at the physical gold prices, you know, the premiums are still high. You know, you don't go down to the coin shop and see people lined up around the block to sell their gold because it's gone down $150. I mean, people aren't rushing to sell their physical gold and silver. Those premiums are still there. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about this Basel III coming up. What's it going to do to it? There's on the one side, you have the banker saying that nothing much is going to take place. It might even hurt the gold price. And on the other side, you have a lot of pundits in the gold space saying that it could be a game changer. You know, I'm not smart enough to know enough about Basel III to know what it's going to do to the gold price. I'm just looking at the technicals now, because I like to follow the technicals of gold, because they pretty much follow the technicals to the T. And the technicals are telling me right now to be cautious and have some cash built up for some bargains that are coming our way in July and August, because as I mentioned before, these false moves take place. They've taken place in the past, and those other dates that I mentioned, where we had the false moves in 2016, in 2018, 2019, before the big move higher. There's one caveat that you could say that wasn't happening at that time. Those false moves took place. Juniors were not cashed up. They needed cash, and now they're cashed up. You know, all the quality juniors cashed up at the right time, and a few of them cashed up right before this smash. So juniors are flush with cash. Majors are flush with cash. They're making boatloads of cash, even at $1,600 gold, with the average all-in sustaining cost about $1,030. So we know that these majors are going to have to replace these ounces sooner rather than later. And we know that M&A's day is coming. We've talked about this ad nauseum. But the thing is these juniors are cashed up, and they're going to be able to de-risk these projects further. I would just say that maybe you should be staying away from optionality plays right now. Those are the things that I lightened up on in my portfolio and advised my subscribers to lighten up on, which is projects that need an $1,800 floor are going to be sold here. So this is a good time to maybe build up some cash, you know, to get into higher margin projects, higher margin juniors that are de-risking higher margin projects that maybe you missed that are also being thrown out with the bathwater here.
Okay. So the big takeaway being build up cash right now, because there still could be some more downside in the underlying metals price and even all those short-term headwinds that we are seeing here that we've outlined. We can summarize them. Looks like a bear flag, false breakout, waterfall decline, silver leading lower, majors are getting sold off, and U.S. markets, there's a more risk-on attitude, right? So all of this is going, unfortunately, in the face of the precious metals here. But then, Dave, you balance that out with those longer-term arguments that we do hear a lot from the gold community saying, well, inflation's picking up. That is valid. We also have central banks. They continue to print money. So there is that long-term holder for some of these, I guess, longer-term investors. But then when it comes down to the stocks that you're picking, you say ditch the optionality plays, wait for bigger sell-offs and maybe the companies that you like. Are there certain areas that you like? Are there certain stage companies in terms of exploration companies that you like? Because you are right. Broadly, they're all cashed up.
Yeah, I mean, I do like earlier stage plays right now that recently cashed up. That are drilling right now, and they're going to have some news flow over the next, you know, a few months. I still like the companies that are de-risking high margin projects that are at the feasibility stage or even at the shovel ready stage, but they have to be higher margin. There's a lot of these companies that are at that stage that need an $1,800 floor before these things are going to get built. So of course, keep an eye on those. And if they get ridiculously cheap and you believe like I do that eventually the gold price is going a lot higher, you'll be able to pick those up very cheap, I think, in the next few months. Because, you know, the gold market is famous for making major bottoms in the July-August time period and in the December time period in tax loss selling. So that period is coming right up here, that July-August period, and we've just had this waterfall decline, and if this is indeed a bear flag on the daily charts and the gold price is going a lot lower, then you could look for your favorite juniors to go a lot lower as well.
Okay. Dave, we'll wrap it up here. Unfortunately, kind of a down note, at least in the short-term sense, to start off this weekend show, but you can't deny what those charts are telling you, and also just where the money has been rotating recently, too. It's a recent change in terms of sentiment in that sense. Dave, great chatting with you as always. Again, Dave writes the Junior Miner Junkie newsletter, also joins us on a weekly basis on the show to recap some of the stocks he likes and what's going on in the metals market. Dave, great chatting with you, buddy. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, you too, Corey.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And we are going to continue our general focus on commodities here as we are chatting with Richard Postma, a.k.a. Doc. And Doc, I really just want to follow up on what we chatted about last segment with Dave Erfley and how he was outlining, well, really what we discussed is all the short-term pressure that is on the precious metals, especially gold. We had a false breakout. We had a waterfall decline 2 weeks ago. We have silver also leading lower. The majors are getting sold off. Doc, what are your thoughts in terms of following up on that conversation we just had with Dave Erfley that outlined some of the short-term weakness that could be here for gold? Are you seeing the same thing in the charts?
Absolutely. And I've not only seen short-term weakness, but I've been saying this thing's going to be weak for quite a while. And, you know, you have to remember the last 2 years we had relatively strong summers in gold. Well, this summer, I'm afraid it's not going to be that way. And I think we're going to continue to trade in a range. I think gold is forming a fairly long-term range, and the monthly Bollinger Bands are starting to form that already. And I think July we might be down a little bit more, and the end of July we might rally a little bit. But, yeah, I'm not real positive on the short-term of this market. You know, I mentioned in the past 2011-12 when we saw a move down, it was like we were wandering in the desert for years. Well, that was back then that was a Sahara Desert. Well, right now we're in the Gobi Desert. It's not as big as the Sahara, but we're going to be in the desert for a while. But that's okay because, as I mentioned before, the strength indicators still really look good to me long term. And it's just that we've got to work the momentum down here for a while yet before we get a real bottom. And even though we may get a bottom, we may be in a trading range even after that for a while. But this isn't going to take as long for the next leg as the 2011-2012. But people are going to have to be patient here. And frankly, I've been starting to buy again on some stocks I like that have really are decent companies, but have been taken to the watershed.
So, Doc, let's dive into some of the companies because, as we said here, the miners, the major miners, have been leading the market lower. And the juniors, unless you're making a brand new, very high grade discovery, a lot of these juniors also seem kind of stuck. There are still a couple of these high flying juniors that seem to almost every week make another leg higher and hit some new highs. But broadly, the stocks are slow right now, and maybe that's just a barometer of the interest in the sector and more people maybe taking summer off because last summer they couldn't. But what are you seeing within some of the stocks and even down into some of the juniors, the lack of movement on the back of what seems like pretty solid news?
Well, take for instance, and I mentioned this off mic, take for instance Bonterra and Jaguar, which came out with really some decent results, but it didn't move their needles at all. That tells you right now about these markets that they're just, there's not the interest. And I own both Bonterra and Jaguar. That's okay if they come back because I've got them at really low prices and I'll be adding to those along with others that I like. But as I mentioned, I'm in no hurry. I keep slowly increasing my percentage over time. The fact that even with exploration news, at this point in time that these companies aren't being impacted as much. And I'm sure, as Shad mentioned, some of these smaller companies might that haven't been noticed at all. If they get good results, then they'll probably move. But the vast majority of these stocks are not moving at all on positive news. And that tells you that we're in a time frame that it's going to take a while. I might mention also something technically. We're right at the mid moving average of the monthly Bollinger Bands. We haven't closed a month below that. But if we do, if we close below that, and we do that a couple of months, well, that tells you that we're settling into a monthly range here that's going to last some time.
Well, Doc, do you think that, I mean, a lot of investors are skittish right now to do what you're doing and average down, which I'm doing the same as well myself, but they don't want to average down because they're worried it could be a longer term downtrend and maybe the bull market's over. Do you think a lot of the confusion with investors comes from they don't look at the monthly charts? They tend to hone in on the daily charts or the weekly charts. So their more myopic view of things is, hey, this looks pretty bad. And then when things turn back up, they get overexcited and they go in a little bit too hard when things have run too hard. Do you think that maybe some of the success you've had as an investor over all the decades is because you use the longer term charts to know when to position in companies, or could you speak to us about that a little bit?
Absolutely, and I think you nailed that. You know, the daily chart, that's for day traders, and even the 1 hour chart, 2 hour charts, there's 4 hour charts. That's for day traders, and even people get excited on the weekly. But if you really want to watch trends of these markets, you have to go out in time. And the monthly chart is great for that. And that's what keeps me sane in these markets where I don't get overhyped on them, is by watching those and being very patient and taking my time as far as purchasing things, because I like to position myself over time at prices that are really low. And then I'll wait because, frankly, Shad, if I can make 100% in 2 years, that's pretty darn good on some of these stocks, or even 200%. You know, I'm willing to wait even 3 or 4 years, because what does the average investor usually make over time? But if you're patient, and I'm an investor, I'm not a trader, I look for these opportunities of contrarianism. And when everybody's very hyped, I stay out of the markets. And when people are really desperate and they've moved away from sectors, that's when I start to get in. And it's really served me well over time. And that's what I'm doing with this one, because we have more time here to get into these markets. And we're going to be in this for a while yet. In fact, don't count on anything big for this year yet. I think by the first quarter of next year, we'll probably be done with the momentum that's moved down. I think then we bottom, and that's when you really get a chance to pick up some bargains.
Okay, and well, just to take the other side of the discussion here, because I do some short-term trading, and I know there's a lot of investors on our site and other sites that look at the daily and the weekly. You could argue that all of the turns in the market always happen on the lesser charts first. They start on the hourly, they move to the daily, they move to the weekly. So what would it take to change your thesis that maybe we are going to break out of this sooner? What would you want to see on the charts to tell you that, hey, you know what? We actually may have a rally into the fall this year. What would change your thesis?
What would really help is if on the MACD, if you started to see the 12-month moving average compromise the 26-month moving average. And if you see that, then the odds are good that we could just sit up here for a while, for many months, and just go higher. But I don't think that'll happen until we get a little lower with the MACD, because we've got to get lower. So the next move up is sustained for many months. Because if we do it now, it's going to be difficult to keep it elevated at those levels. And that's why, but that's what I would say, that, wow, if the 12-month started to compromise the 26-month moving average, then we probably got a ball game that's really interesting, because I'll tell you, as I've talked in the past, the strength indicators are not exactly getting hammered here, which is good. It tells you there's ultimately underlying strength in this market that will benefit people in the future, and they won't have to wait as long as 2011 and 2012.
So, Doc, if you're not seeing a bounce here in the gold sector broadly and in stocks broadly, not this rising tide lifting all boats, when you are trading into a stock, or if you already hold a stock and it does pop for whatever reason on the back of good news, or just because, who knows, maybe some strategic investor got involved, are you trimming those positions then because of your general outlook in the near term of not a big run coming in the sector?
Yeah, and what I've done in the past is whenever we've had runs like in gold, and now everybody's discouraged because they think we're going to have another one like we had in the past, I'll take profits, especially on some of the exploration plays, because especially the new ones that hit and everybody bids those things up by 400 to 500%, I'll usually sell out on those. And so over time, I continue to increase my portfolio size, but I'll keep a base of stocks that I like, that I don't want to get out of and where they suddenly turn on me if I sell. And then I'd miss the really big move, which, by the way, I think is going to be the next move. I think the next time we move up, we're finally potentially going to have that parabolic move that everybody would love to see that we've seen in past precious metal markets. And I think the odds are pretty good on the next one that we really start to benefit from being patient. But that's what I do. I'll sell out on some stocks that haven't even gotten into development that have had a big move because of a big fine. Because they generally come back again, I found.
So, Doc, final question then. In terms of looking outside of just the gold chart and gold stock charts, what's a key driver here for gold moving forward? We can look at the U.S. dollar, which has rebounded. Also look at the U.S. equity markets that continue to outperform the precious metals. And now a more risk-on trade happening there, which just further puts some pressure on precious metals. What's critical to look outside of that gold sphere?
Well, I think what precious metals are telling you probably right now is that for once the Fed may have gotten it right, that we might have a little transitory inflation here. And if we start to see inflation pulling back, then you can understand why this market has behaved like it has. So that's number one, because if we do have transitory inflation, I do think down the road we're going to get the real deal. But particularly, I think the U.S. dollar is still hovering, and I think it will hover for a while. But eventually, it's got to be depreciation of the dollar with inflation that's going to really move these markets. And I think that will happen. The dollar chart to me, long-term chart, right now looks like we may move up in the dollar for a while. But it's not going to be a significant move. And I think after the next move, then we have a chance of coming back down and challenging that support area that's been there for now almost 7 years. And I think the next time around, we might have a good chance of breaking down the dollar.
All right, Doc, great chatting with you. Thanks for taking some time on this weekend show again. And, well, I guess really reiterating what we had to say and what Dave Erfley had to say in the prior segment, but also sharing that trading strategy that you have for getting into the sector when it is ignored or unloved, as it is kind of right now. Doc, thanks as always for your time. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend. We'll chat again soon.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Cortland Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are going to continue our focus mostly in the precious metals sector and diving into a few more stocks here as Shad and I are chatting with Jayant Bhandari. Now, Jayant is well known on our show, but for all of our new listeners, Jayant consults with some of the bigger players, some of the bigger investors in the resource sector, especially when it comes to investing in some of the juniors or exploration companies. Now, Jayant, we've had a couple questions come in, mostly focused on what your thoughts are around this recent LE Gold acquisition by Gold Royalty here. Kind of a merger and bringing a couple of the smaller and newer royalty companies together. Now, I know and I followed along with LE Gold, but Gold Royalty has been a company that I haven't stayed too up to date on and honestly haven't invested in either. But Jayant, what are your thoughts? What do you think of this business combination / acquisition here?
So this is not an arbitrage play, Corey, that I'm going to participate in. And the reason is that I have not looked at Gold Royalties properly. And this company came into existence only a few months back. It became a company as an offshoot of Gold Mining, which is a company that has several projects in South America. Now, my concern with Gold Mining has been that I don't know when their projects will go into production. Now, if the projects get delayed or don't go into production, the royalties will have no value. And that is the reason why I did not bother to look at Gold Royalties so far. And that is the reason why I'm not going to participate in this arbitrage. Now, LE Gold, as you rightly said, has actually has a good portfolio of royalties. For that reason, I would have invested in LE Gold. But again, LE Gold has gone up quite a bit as a result of this merger. In going in process. So I have no interest in participating in this for now.
Okay. And I find that interesting, Jayant, because you do like investing in arbitrage opportunities, but this is one of those that you're not taking part in because it sounds like you're not overly impressed with the end product here. So you're not even taking on that risk. And you have to consider, I think there are some nuances within the acquisition too. So just summarize, again, this is an arbitrage opportunity, but you're not liking it because you don't like the end product. Is that fair to say?
Partly yes, but also partly because I don't have confidence in when those projects will actually go into productions, the projects on who royalties belong to Gold Royalties. So if I don't feel confident on projects going into production, those royalties, in my view, have zero value. So a company has to really clarify to me when those projects will go into production before I can start putting some numbers on them. And I haven't seen that process as yet with the two companies. So because I don't have confidence in one of the companies, I should not be investing for arbitrage because my underlying value should be well protected. Otherwise, I don't want to play in arbitrage games.
All right. So then, Jayant, what are you watching in the market here? Where do you see opportunity? What do you like in the market? Where do you see maybe some new interest coming into? Big picture, wide open question. What do you like in, especially the, let's say, precious metals, four precious metals juniors?
So, Corey, what I have seen over the last couple of months is that there's a shift happening in Latin America, at least shift in the sense that public perception might be starting to change about Latin America. Latin America is becoming increasingly leftist, and America is no longer there to stop Latin America from going leftist. So I think the risk profile of most of Latin America will continue to increase going forward. As a result, while African political risks won't have reduced in absolute terms, but in relative terms, it will have become better, which means that investors will increasingly look at Africa with more interest, because they will start to think that Africa is not necessarily all that bad compared to some of the Latin American countries, particularly when they get a nice upside in some of the investment opportunities in Africa. And that is where I think a shift should start to happen over the next few months.
Yeah, Jayant, I agree with you as far as the risk profile rising in Latin America and South America in particular. But that leaves areas like the Nubian Shield in Africa and West Africa wide open. And every jurisdiction's different. It really comes down to the country and the local jurisdiction they're working. Are there any companies in the African area then that have your interest right now as far as a good opportunity for investors?
Well, a few weeks back, we talked about a company called Nucor Gold, which has a project in Ghana, and a company that I like quite a bit, and a project that I think is doing very well, and a project that continues to expand. But there's another company that I have started to like quite a bit, and that company is Montage Gold. The ticker is MAU, and the share is about 85 cents. It's actually a very decent sized project, which should end up producing about 3 million ounces of gold. And they have done about 50 or 60,000 meters of drilling after they released the PEA. The company has, I think, has a very good project. The management is excellent. I have known that management for a long time. They have had several successes in Ghana, Sudan, Mauritania, and I recall in Yemen and a couple of Arabian Gulf countries as well. So the management is excellent, and they are very well-connected people. They are very well supported by the capital market as well. So that's a company that I'm very keen on right now, which is Montage Gold, MAU, and the share price is 85 cents.
Also traded on the OTC markets under the symbol MAUTF. We actually had the CEO, Hugh Stewart, on the show early on in June here. And look, the company does have a very advanced project here. They are moving through a feasibility study going to be completed by this year, I believe. Now, Giant, do you like the potential re-rate potential here? Do you like still all the drilling that the company is doing? What really attracts you and makes you think that there could be some near-term upside here?
Yeah, I think there's a near-term upside in this company. And the reason is that while what they released was a PEA, most of the work that they have done prepare the PEA was probably a feasibility report grade of work, except, of course, for the resources. Most of the resources, I think, are inferred resources. But remember, the intercepts that they have had are very long and consistent, which means that I don't see a reason why their resources should change as they upgrade them from inferred to measured and indicated. As a result, I personally don't see a huge risk with upgrading the resources. And if a lot of other things have been prepared on feasibility report basis, then this project actually has a very short-term reason to get re-rated by the market.
Giant, that brings up an interesting question about development stage companies in general. When we see a company that's done well with the drill bit, they've done well in their exploration, they've defined a resource, and then they're in that weird, what we call the orphan phase on the mining cycle, where they're permitting, they're constructing, you know, they're building out their economic studies, they're doing the metallurgical work. How do you play companies like that? Do you like to get in when you've seen a resource developed and then get in before they go into a end stage feasibility and first pour and construction decision? Or do you like to trade in and out of development stage companies and then get in when they're closer to going into production? How do you do that with development stage companies?
I don't play that game, Shad, and I know there's something called, is it called Pierre-Lassonde curve, which says that share prices tend to go up and then they fall and then they start going up just before they go into production. And I think that's a very erroneous curve, because that curve might be true with some of the companies, and you have a selection bias. So if you believe in that curve, you will look for those share price performances of the past of selected companies. So I don't like that curve explanation that a lot of people give, because if you think through this thing, if something has to fall, why would I buy it now in the first place? And also, a lot of companies which don't follow that curve don't get highlighted as companies that that did not follow that curve. So I think that's a very erroneous curve. It's a good thing to look at, but I think it gives people a very erroneous understanding of when to invest in these companies. My philosophy is very simple. If I see value, I should invest in it. And I see good value in let's say Montage Gold. So I just want to buy it because it can just keep going up.
Fair enough. Why overcomplicate it, right, Giant? And the numbers around that PEA were very strong, too. So that's something to consider. But the company also has a fully funded 55,000-meter drill program here. And what Hugh outlined to us, too, is that they are looking for even more, let's call it satellite deposits, where they can run kind of a hub-and-spoke model. But obviously, they are initially still focused on bringing this Koné Gold project into production. What do you think about the exploration component here in this story?
Well, I haven't really thought much about the exploration component because based on what I know about the project already, I already see a very nice upside. And I, when I value a company, I do my own discounted cash flow. I use the spot price and I use a 20% discount rate. And I still get a very good upside in owning this company.
Giant, one more point then about a different company that we have talked about a number of times, O3 Mining. I'm a shareholder. I know you're a shareholder, but and a lot of our audience I know holds shares. But in all fairness, the stock hasn't really gone anywhere for quite a long time. And the company has a lot of work and a lot of drilling going on. And they've even been de-risking some of their projects. What do you think, Giant? What's going to drive O3 Mining? What are your thoughts now on where the company stands?
Corey, O3 is probably the largest holding that I have, or the second largest holding that I have. And I like the company. I like the people involved in the company. But what I do see is that, Corey, many times I try to contact company as a retail investor to see how a company responds to me. And unfortunately, I have to admit that I did not get response from O3 Mining when I wrote to them as a retail investor. And also, one thing that I did highlight to the company was that on slide number 14 of the company, they have given valuation of the company and they have completely forgotten to add the cash and stock price valuation of Moneta Porcupine, which is actually worth $2 per share of O3 Mining. Now, how can you miss out on $2 per share of O3 Mining value when giving a valuation of the company? So I don't think that's something the company has to do with IR to ensure that the market starts to receive proper and full information about the company. There's a huge amount of upside in the company, but if the market does not know about that $2 cash value, why will market give value to the company in the market?
Yeah, Giant, I agree. There's sometimes those holdings of securities that companies have that don't get fully factored in. But if you just look at O3 Mining, just based on some of the economic studies they've done, there's a very big gulf between where they're being rated by the marketplace and where their economic studies and their projects come in. So on O3 Mining, and then also just in a general sense, this ties into that development question I was asking earlier as well. How do you look at it when you see a company like this that has very valuable projects, but the market's not really rating them? Do you think that that's just par for the course with development stage companies, or do you think the company can do something to really highlight that and then get more value and traction with investors?
I think the problem with O3 is the lack of proper investor relations. If they did proper investor relations, this share price should shoot up. That's my hope. And the reason is very simple. The share price is about $2.30. The cash and stock value that they have is worth about $2. The value of Alpha is easily about $50 to $70 million based on what Agnico Eagle was prepared to pay for that project. So just based on cash and Alpha, they have an upside based on the current share price. And the Marban project, which is the key project of the company, comes to you completely free of cost. But then the company has to communicate that properly. And as I said, on slide number 14, they don't even bother to mention $2 per share of O3 value to the marketplace. And if the market doesn't hear about it, they will just ignore it.
Unfortunately, that is true, Giant, but still interesting to hear that you still hold shares in O3 Mining. And in full disclosure, I hold shares and Chad also holds shares in the company. Look, there's a lot of work being done in the sector. A lot of companies are cashed up, and I know it can feel overwhelming for some investors to figure out which companies are doing the right work and which work is going to drive the stock. And quite frankly, we don't know all the time, especially when it comes to exploration. But again, if you can be positioned in some of the good companies that are doing some good work, then hopefully the drill bit hits and, well, that can really carry stocks higher. But you do need to keep on reanalyzing companies that you hold in your portfolio because, yeah, sometimes companies just don't work out and it's better to clear out your shares before just riding that potential share price lower. Giant, great chatting with you. Thanks again for your time on this weekend show. We'll chat again in another few weeks. And if anybody has any follow-up questions for Giant regarding any companies they're watching, as always, you can email us, fleck@kereport.com or chad@kereport.com. Giant, as always, thanks for your time. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Great. Thanks for the opportunity.
Welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're going to stick to resources, but now more so in the energy sector, as I am chatting with Joseph Schatcher, the founder and editor of the Schatcher Energy Report, also writes the Eye on Energy, which is a free report that really just breaks down the news out of the energy sector and the company and the sector fundamentals in terms of data that does drive these markets that I do think we should pay attention to. The Schatcher Energy Report is where Joseph dives a bit more into some of the companies that he likes and is investing in. Joseph, let's start off big picture, general question regarding oil. We still have crude holding above $70 a barrel. And in all fairness, there's still a lot of bearish comments, a lot of people waiting for a pullback in oil, but oil just continues to, I guess, weather a lot of those bearish calls and hang up at these generally higher levels than what we've seen over the last couple of years. Joseph, what do you think? When are we going to finally get that correction, or have we gone on long enough that maybe the next leg is up higher for oil?
Okay, what I see is happening is there's a tug of war. The bulls are running around saying demand is growing. U.S. Demand this week was 20.8 million, 20.75, up for 180,000 from a week ago, and it's equal to where it was in June of 2019. So we're effectively back to U.S. demand being equal to what it was pre-pandemic. The interesting thing was jet fuel, because people are flying much more. A year ago, it was only 805,000 barrels a day on average. It's now up to 1.58 million barrels a day and up 326,000 just in the week. And we are now above where we were pre-pandemic. So if you look at some of the data from the U.S. government on the number of people flying and stuff like that, they're back to it. So that's the bullish side there. Europe is reopening. So everybody's looking at this reopening trade and saying that, you know, we've got all this growth in demand. And yes, OPEC is raising production, you know, by small amounts over, you know, each of the periods. You know, they'll be due 700,000 this month and 840,000 next month. Russia is saying, why don't we add another 500,000 in July because the demand is there. So there's the growth side of it is where people are looking at, and that's getting the main focus, and that's why we're sitting in the $73, $74 a barrel range, WTI. Now, on the bearish side of it, you have the talks that are going on in Vienna for Iran, and Iran is potentially you know, going to receive sanction relief if they sign up on that UN nuclear agreement and control of their program to upgrade their uranium. If that gets approved, and they're hoping that it happens before the new president gets sworn into office in early August, so they're saying that
If something goes wrong with it, he can blame his predecessor. If it goes well, he can take credit for it. And they've already negotiated over 1,000 items of sanction relief. So they're very close. My expectation is we'll get an announcement in July. And that'll bring on 1.5 to 2 million barrels a day before year end. And Iran has built over the last year or two a pipeline system that goes to the in the Straits of Hormuz, but goes down to the Gulf of Oman. So it's away from the Straits and is easier to ship to Asia. They've also increased their storage to 200 million barrels on the coast, and 200 million barrels available for sale, and 80 million barrels of that are on the sea, with a large portion of that in Singapore. So the minute they get the go-ahead, they will increase production, and that, I think, will take the amount of balance between, let's say, maybe balanced or equal demand and supply, you know, with what OPEC's planning to do, to a point where we have a surplus. The other thing is, with these high prices, you're having demand destruction to some extent, because people are saying these prices are, you know, very, very high, and so they're not going to want to drive after the summer driving season. That's going to be a limiting factor. And the third issue is the U.S. side is coming back on. At the low, we were 9.7 million barrels after the pandemic hit and the industry shut down with those, you know, extremely low prices. If you remember April, we had negative pricing for a short while there. And now you've got 11.1 million barrels, so you're up 1.4 million barrels from the low. And the amount of drilling activity has picked up significantly in the United States, both for oil and natural gas. We're going to see maybe another 500,000 barrels come on if we keep over $60 a barrel before year end. So I think with Iran and U.S. new production, we're going to end up seeing a surplus. Once you start seeing increasing in the weekly commercial inventory stocks in the States, if you remember this week, we had a decline of over 7 million barrels. That was what, pushed prices up again. Once we start seeing an increase, which we should start seeing after the end of the summer driving season, that will cool things off. So my view is we're overbought. We're going to stay overbought until we hear about Iran being done. Then how quickly Iran comes on will have some impact on it. And then we'll be watching the weekly U.S. data. But I think sometime during Q3, we're going to see a correction. Is it going to be just to 60, or is it going to be to the 50s and low 50s? That's going to be the issue. And it'll be based on what OPEC does with increasing supply on their own. When does Iran come on, and how quickly those big volumes come on, and how quickly the U.S. comes on. I think the direction is going to be down. I think the price where we are right now, remember thinking about this, right now demand is about 96, 96.5 million barrels per day, and we're at $73 U.S. WTI, and yet in January of 2020, pre-pandemic, demand was 100 million barrels, and we were only 62. So the numbers just don't make sense where we are. They're there because of MEM investors who've been buying $100 call options both for 21 and 2022. Also, you've had hedge funds going aggressively into all commodities, copper, lumber, all of them. And we've had corrections already in lumber. We've had corrections in copper. We're having corrections in some of them, some of the foods as well, cattle and grains. So I think we're starting to see a cool off in the ones that led the rally in commodities. Laggard was energy, and so I think we're going to see a pullback. The one holding thing back on the energy side is natural gas is probably going to have a very good summer because the U.S. Inventories of water for hydro are very low because of the drought conditions, and so the electricity needs for summer air conditioning, especially with the very hot weather you're seeing on the south and the west, that's going to cause an increase in demand for natural gas. So natural gas prices are in the 320, 330 range for the U.S. NYMEX price, and the Canadian AECO price is very similar. That's all positive for natural gas. So if we do see a bit of a correction in oil, it won't come down until after we get through the heat waves. And also remember, hurricane season is a big part of the issue for the U.S. Industry. And so I think we're going to see that today, for example, NatGas NYMEX is up 8 cents to $3.42 an MCF. So they're very, very attractive pricing on the natural gas side. And so natural gas stocks have done better both in Canada and the United States than the oily names have.
Okay. Now, before we get into the stocks, one more quick question is that you pointed out the fact that, look, commodities broadly have pulled back, but oil has not, energy has not, but there are still a lot of these headwinds that you are seeing. Why has the oil sector been able to withstand the general pullback in commodities? Is it simply because the demand side has picked up that much?
Well, the demand side has picked up from, let's say, 92 million in Q1 to the 96 and a half now. It may get in the summertime. Remember, the summer driving season hasn't really started until we get past the July long weekend. That may take it to 97 and a half. But once we get past September long weekend, that demand is going to fall by about 2 million barrels a day. And if that's when Iran comes on with new production and the U.S. brings on new production, that's when the glut will appear and commercial inventories will start growing. And that's when I think we'll see the pullback in it. Right now, it's all like meme investing. You know, you think about AMC and GameStop and BlackBerry and all these companies. The companies themselves say the fundamentals don't justify their stocks. So AMC is selling paper. GameStop is selling paper. I'm surprised we haven't seen BlackBerry do that, too. But the reality is when you have these meme and momentum investors, fundamentals don't matter. It's just, the latest news flow plus the crowd funding and chasing stocks. You know, we saw, I think it was 2 weeks ago, they decided Wendy's was going to be a buy for some reason. The stock went up 20% in a day. And then the day next day, they walked away and came right back down. So, you know, you never know where this horde investing is going to go. But right now, they're supporting energy, both WTI and natural gas. Natural gas, I think they're justified because of course, the hot weather and the lack of, the ability of hydro to meet the electricity needs during the summertime. But in the case of oil, I think it's way overvalued based on, the macro numbers that I mentioned to you. We were, 100, 101 in January of 2020, and now we're only 96 to 96 and a half, and yet the price has gone from 62 to 73. So the numbers just don't make sense for being here, but speculative money flows have driven it to these levels.
Well, Joseph, absolutely. The speculative money flows have chased those meme stocks higher as well as the energy space in a number of sectors. But I've got kind of a two-part question I would like to ask you, and it's around the oil stocks and the oil and gas stocks. There's the three different categories of the producers, the explorers and developers, and then the oil services companies. So I would just like to ask you, based on where prices are at now, if they were to hang in the 70s, let's say, where would your interest be? Where do you see the growth is? And then the second part of that would be, if we do get the correction that many are anticipating, including yourself, that we do pull back down into the 60s, maybe the 50s, which areas would you be most interested in looking at as far as picking up positions? Would it be the producers, the explorers and developers, or would it be in the oil services side of things?
Well, there's not really many explorers in Canada. You know, the Montney play is a development play, and again, the industry there is being very careful on bringing on excess supply. So the only explorers really are the international ideas, and we cover names like Canacol, Touchstone, Alvo Petro, Gran Tierra that are in South America or Trinidad, and that's where there is exploration going on. Domestically, it's all manufacturing plays in the Montney, the Duvernay, and shallower oil plays in southeast Saskatchewan, etc. So what I'm looking at is I think the value right now where the stocks still can go further upward are the natural gas stocks, because if we end up going up another 50 cents or a dollar in MCF, that's going to mean cash flows are going to be growing faster for natural gas companies than they will for oil companies. That's number one. Number two, if we do see a correction, I think the ones that are the most levered with balance sheet issues, and so a lot of the oil companies are in that group, and mostly you have a lot of the companies in the energy service sector have very bad balance sheets. And so the leverage, you know, when with everybody seeing the recovery in drilling, the stocks have gone up like crazy. Like if you take Precision Drilling, it's gone from, you know, $7 at the low in March of last year. And we put it on the recommendation list at the time. Well, now we're looking at a $51 stock today. And to me, it's excessively overvalued. You know, if I had any, I would still sell it, but I've gone now, it's made a fabulous return for investors, but it's way overvalued versus where it should be. To me, those are the stocks that are most vulnerable. If you take oil down and then past the summertime, when the natural gas market slows down because you don't have the summer electricity for air conditioning need, I think you'll see both natural gas and oil cool off during the third quarter, during the shoulder season, after the summer driving season and into November, December, when we start the winter demand season.
Okay, and there's one other idea you mentioned earlier I'd like to circle back around to, Joseph, and that was you mentioned some of the U.S. producers are coming on now that the prices have gotten up in the 60s and 70s. Before, a lot of the lower prices we saw last year in the $10 to $40 range was too low for some of the fracking companies and even for some of the companies that produce a lot of nat gas. But now that prices have come back in a big way, do you think that we'll see more action in the U.S. and could it be derailed if we then see that pullback? What are your thoughts on the U.S. Producers, in particular companies that have a higher cost profile coming back in the space?
Yeah, I think if you have a higher cost profile, and then the other side of it is, of course, the balance sheet. If you still have a lot of debt and servicing that debt becomes more problematic if the price of oil backs off and price of natural gas backs off. And if the drilling industry slows down from the growth we've seen, which would happen if you came below 60 and much more, it would slow down even more if we went below 50. So I think that the highest beta stocks in terms of downside risk would be the energy service sector. The only near-term benefit would be if these prices stay up in the 70s and we have these high natural gas prices. You may see more merger mania. I think this morning you saw an announcement where Ensign bought the Canadian operation of Nabors, and so they're because of the recovery in Canada being sharper than the recovery in the States in terms of drilling activity. I can give you the example: the Canadian oil rig count has gone from 75 rigs a year ago to 74. The natural gas rigs from 12 to 43, so that's up 15 times on oil and 3.6 times for gas. If you go to the U.S., the rig count there is up to 470 from 266, up 77%. The oil rig count is up 97% to 373 versus 189. Gas is only up 29%, 97 versus 75. So I would think that this deal that we saw from Ensign just gives Nabors more firepower to stay in the game and pay down debt, and we're going to see somewhat more consolidation, I believe. And we're seeing consolidation a little bit in the service sector, that Ensign deal today, but we're also seeing a lot of consolidation occurring in the oil and natural gas space. Tourmaline making that big acquisition, a week or so ago. Or 2 weeks ago now, and we saw the announcement yesterday by Surge Energy buying out a Southeast Saskatchewan light oil producer, and we saw all the merger mania that we had with Whitecap during late 2020 and early 2021. So there's going to be more of that, I think, as companies go after competitors in the same area, and then they see the efficiencies from running the business together. And smaller private companies saying, let's do this deal because I get public stock. So this private company that the Surge bought will now have, they're putting up 4,000 BOEs a day to the 16,000 that Surge had. So there'll be a 20,000 BOE a day company. But the new shareholders from the private company will own a third of the company, even though they're bringing in only 25% of new production. So the light oil value per BOE is worth more than the value of middle grade oil, which is what Surge had prior to making this new deal.
Interesting, Joseph. Good chatting with you as always. A good update here on the energy sector, especially oil. And yeah, oil just continues to hang up there, right? So a couple timelines that we can look to for the next pullback here. But hey, that M&A activity has been very interesting in the sector as well. Joseph, thank you for your time. Everybody, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. Please keep all the emails coming, either fleck@kereport.com or email shad@kereport.com. And please go back, listen to all the daily editorials and the company updates that we did this week. There's a lot of content on a relatively slower week, but still, there's a lot of good stuff going on with companies especially. Joseph, thanks as always for your time. Have a great weekend.
Same to you. Take good care.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.